This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Thursday. We're going to talk about the communists using our values against us here briefly. I do want to get to this Mamdani story out of New York City. Of course, 10 minutes from now, our final semifinal matchup of the crappiest country in the world tournament. That's going to determine the finals, which will take place next week for all the marbles or rice, depending on what kind of country we're discussing. All that, and plus Brandon Weikert about a half hour from now. Apparently the war with Iran is going to fire up again, and Venezuela, we might be dropping bombs on them soon. This is wild. Anyway, all that is coming up in this hour on the Jesse Kelly Show. So obviously, I don't really care about what Sonny Hostin has to say about anything, so it's not about The View or Sonny Hostin. What is important is that you and I understand the tactics the enemy uses against us. We have to understand what they're doing and why they're doing it so we can stop it. Right? She's talking about pro-life and gun owners, and here she is.
So you're against the death penalty in all cases? Because some people really deserve to get it.
I am against the death penalty in all cases.
Well, I think...
In all cases. And that's why I find there is a hypocrisy with certain Christians who are pro-life, but they will pull that electric chair switch. They are pro-life, but they have their AR-15s in their cabinet. They are pro-life, but they don't mind immigrant families being torn from each other. They are pro-life, but they don't care about little children's subsidies being taken away from them. That is not pro-life.
That is not pro-life. You're pro-life, and you have an AR-15. You're not pro-life. It is a tactic we've talked about a lot. We continue to grow and gain more stations and listeners, so we're going to have that discussion again briefly right now. Communists do not share your value system. In fact, they don't share a value system that you would even recognize as human. They're completely different. What motivates them is completely different. We'll set that aside. But what it does do, what their value system does do, is it grants them permission to use yours against you. And the reason I will continue harping on this is the truth is this has been probably the most effective tactic used by the communists on the American right. They've been insanely successful using our values against us for decades and decades and decades. It's really the main reason why they were able to penetrate so deeply into all of our institutions. We wanted to be nice. We wanted to be kind. We wanted to be tolerant. Whenever they would run up against some form of resistance, they would appeal to your humanity. I thought you loved freedom. I thought you loved Jesus. Don't you believe what it says in the Bible? Aren't you going to be kind? Shouldn't you be turning the other cheek? And we, not realizing what was happening, not realizing why they were saying what they were saying, constantly backed off. Well, you know what? You are right. Well, I do want to be nice. Jesus would want me to be nice. That is what he said. So, you can have the Cub Scouts. All right, you know what? Actually, you can be one of the pastors in our church. Well, you know what? Yeah, you can be my son's teacher. I don't want to be thought of intolerant. After all, she's just a tranny with pink hair. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look mean. And the second you try to speak up, they whip out your Bible right out of your pocket. They have nothing for disdain, nothing but disdain for, by the way. Nothing but disdain for you and your beliefs. But they will whip your Bible out in a heartbeat, and they'll hold it up in your face, and they'll say, "You want to own a gun? I want to take your guns away. I thought you said you were pro-life. The Bible talks about that. I guess you're not, since you want to own a gun. Do you want to?" And by the way, what I'm about to say still infects churches across this country, coast to coast. Do you want to deport people who came here illegally? or stay here illegally? Do you think Jesus would want that? That's not what Jesus would want. Now, this is not a person who cares about Jesus, believes in Jesus, reads the Old Testament or the New Testament, nothing but disdain for you and your beliefs. But they understand very well what your beliefs are, and they will whip them out and beat you over the face with them the second their revolution runs up against trouble. I didn't play it for you so you could hear this brain-dead idiot on The View. She is a moron who has been trained in communist tactics for years and years and years and years and years. This is how they've been trained. This is what they do. I'm going to play it again. Write it in stone on your heart and understand every time they pull out your values, it is to weaken your resistance to their revolution. This is a tactic they're trained in.
So you're against the death penalty in all cases? Because some people really deserve to get it.
I am against the death penalty in all cases.
Well, I think...
In all cases. And that's why I find there is a hypocrisy with certain Christians who are pro-life.
Pause there real quick. I'll let her go in a moment. What'd she just do? I've noticed there's a hypocrisy. If I sat down with you, let's say we're sitting down at Red Lobster, and we got some mozzarella sticks and we got some Cajun shrimp Alfredo and some shrimp scampi, and we're dipping our Cheddar Bay biscuits in the shrimp scampi butter as we do, just having a conversation, you and me, and I very frankly told you that I thought you were a hypocrite. I thought you were being a hypocrite about something. That would hurt your feelings, wouldn't it? You wouldn't like that. You would want to hear an explanation. And frankly, even if you got mad at me, you would probably examine yourself. Oh my gosh, am I being a hypocrite? Notice their hypocrisy never bothers them. In fact, they try to be hypocrites. But they understand hypocrisy is something you don't want to embrace. Being a hypocrite is not something you ever want to be thought of. And so they understand, again, a tactic that is a great way to weaken your defenses to the revolution.
So you're against the death penalty in all cases? Because some people really deserve to get it.
I am against the death penalty in all cases.
Well, I think...
In all cases. And that's why I find there is a hypocrisy with certain Christians who are pro-life, but they will pull that electric chair switch. They are pro-life, but they have their AR-15s in their cabinet.
Oh,
they are pro-life, but they don't mind immigrant families being torn from each other. They are pro-life, but they don't care about little children's subsidies being taken away from them. That
Hold
is not
now.
Pro-life.
You call yourself a Christian? If you were a Christian, you'd let me have my revolution. If you were a Christian, you wouldn't believe in killing murderers. If you were really a Christian, you would give up your ability to defend yourself from me. That way I could send hordes of animals to your home whenever you made me angry. If you were a Christian, you would give those guns up. Aren't you a Christian? If you were a Christian, you would allow me to import entire prison gangs from foreign countries who will rape and murder your daughter. If you were a real Christian, and not a hypocrite, you'd let me. Aren't you a real Christian? They do it all the time. They have been trained in it. They have been thoroughly programmed in it. And the reason I will warn about this until the day they finally fire me and take me off the air is because it works. I've watched it work endlessly on the right, especially on the church. I'm not going to bore you again with the story of losing my church after George Floyd died. Not because my pastor was an evil man. He's not my pastor anymore. He's a very good man, I believe. Humble, kind human being. Not ready to deal with the communist menace. They pulled him into some commie black coalition where they scolded him for the color of his skin. He went to a What White People Need to Know conference, and the next Sunday stood up in front of the church and talked about all of our white privilege. An evil man? No. A man who simply did not understand the tactics of the devil and did not understand he was dealing with evil. He did not understand he was dealing with trained subversives, trained infiltrators, and he stood no chance. Stand up to these people. Never, ever, ever let the communists use your values against you. All right? All right. North Korea is about to go to war with Haiti. No, not in real life, although that'd be entertaining. We're just talking about in our crappiest country in the world tournament, which continues next.
Feeling a little stocky?
Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, fantastic Thursday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Now, there's only one more semifinal matchup in our crappiest country in the world tournament. This is for the right to go fight for your honor as being the worst place on earth. The championship will take place, what is it, Monday or Tuesday, Chris? Tuesday. Next Tuesday is the championship. Somalia already fought valiantly. They have turned their country into a war-torn hellhole where women are treated like garbage, and that earned them the right to fight for a championship. Now, it's up to North Korea. It's up to Haiti. Now, it's a question. Look, you're both talented. You're both just awful in every possible way. Horrible, putrid places, garbage cultures. You are both wretched. So now it's just about effort. Now it's about will. Who wants it more, North Korea or Haiti?
It's the 2025 Crappiest Country in the World competition. Tonight's matchup is between North Korea and Haiti. Brought to you by Big Debbie's Urinal Cakes. Delicious and only 10 calories.
So let's do a brief version, a brief recap of how are things over there in North Korea.
In North Korea, they have concentration camps, plural, that are as bad as anything that happened in World War II. North Korea has a real specialty when it comes to torture. Oftentimes, it's water torture. Oh, and I should note, when you're being tortured, North Korea will arrest your entire family, oftentimes, and do it to everybody. So it's something the whole family gets to enjoy as they force water down your throat and then step on your stomach. They jam needles underneath your fingernails and all the way to just hanging you upside down and then beating you senseless. You have no rights, no freedom of speech. There is a strict class system where you can't advance beyond the lower classes at all. There's slavery. Did you think we were past that time? The North Korean government, because people have no rights and they have no guns, they will just show up at your house and yank you out and turn you into an uncompensated worker, which is, you know, slang for slavery, in one of their mines or camps or somewhere else. You don't have to have done anything wrong whatsoever to get conscripted as a slave. They do this to their own people.
Not a great place. But they're up against the juggernaut. Smaller than North Korea, no question. They don't have the concentration camps, but Haiti's, look, this is like a boxing matchup. North Korea, they're more of a power puncher. Haiti, lighter on their feet, lighter on their feet. It's, look, boxing's all about matchups. Let's meet the other contender.
On the U.S. State Department's advice section for if you're traveling to Haiti, I kid you not, there is advice on how you need to choose a family member with whom the kidnappers can negotiate your ransom price. So the bad news is you might be murdered, raped, eaten, and chopped up with a machete in Haiti if you visit there. But the good news is that sister you hate, you can force her to cough up some ransom money and cost her a fortune.
Haiti's terrible. Now, I didn't know who you were going to choose because, remember, you've been able to vote this whole time. I believe I've only overruled you one time, right, Chris? One time. So I don't want to hear any more whining about how I'm a dictator who doesn't obey the will of the people. I do that unless you're dumb. But for the most part, what, Chris? I'm being nice. I let you have your say. I kind of assumed North Korea was going to win, not because Haiti is anything but one of the most cursed lands on the planet, but North Korea does have, like, real concentration camps, real ones. They still have slavery. It's unbelievably bad. But the people have spoken, and they've spoken out in such a way, I can't even overrule this. Haiti destroyed North Korea in the semifinals. And didn't Somalia just destroy India too, Chris? It doesn't look like it is. Haiti won this round, and they won it easily, and credit to them. And as we've discussed before, when you have a team in any sport, and it finally gets to the playoffs, whatever that may be, NFL playoffs or college football playoffs or Major League Baseball playoffs, if there's a team that's been dominating everyone they face, that oftentimes is the team that's going to win it all. But how in the world do you handicap it when you have two different teams who have dominated all comers? Somalia is so bad, they wrecked everybody. There's poop on the streets in India, and Somalia still just slaughtered them as if it was an unborn child. Haiti, they eat people. I don't know how we handle this. I don't know who you're going to choose, but now it's up to you to vote. Haiti versus Somalia next week. Go vote. Let your voice be heard. Now, before you do that, go get wise at Hillsdale College. Go learn about the world in which we live. Go learn about Athens and Sparta. Learn about capitalism. Learn as a family. I want to continue to stress this over and over and over again. There are so many things we do as a family that are just fun, and there's nothing wrong with that. Have fun. Go play football in the backyard. Go to the pool. Watch a movie. Play cards. Do all the things you do as a family. But sitting down as a family and hoovering up wisdom, it's good to have your children see that. Not just for the wisdom Hillsdale gives us, for them to see, oh, I should take some free time and do something beneficial with it. Hillsdale College gives us that wisdom at no cost. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. No cost. Go learn, all right? We're all about to learn from Brandon Weikert. National security stuff. Next.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Thursday, reminding you to get your Ask Dr. Jesse questions in for tomorrow, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. But we don't have time for that right now because Brandon Weikert is going to talk to us about bombs dropping on Iran, and then we're going to go to Venezuela, and the world is coming to an end. I'm kidding, it's not coming to an end, but our national security guy, Brandon Weikert, author of so many great books, joins us now. Okay, Brandon, we're going to set Venezuela aside for just a few moments, and let's talk about Iran. It was my understanding that we flew around the world and dropped some bombs and took out their nuclear facilities, and now it's been peace in the Middle East. Is that not the case?
No, that's not the case. No, this. And thanks for having me, by the way. This is that was merely round one. Round two is at hand, and it's looking like we've moved a dozen KC-135 Strato tankers into Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. It looks like we've got the USS Gerald R. Ford heading to the Med. That's going to bring with it its air wing of F-35s and FA-18s, as well as the E-2D Hawkeye and I think those are the big ones out of there. So basically, we are ramping up for what looks to me like an imminent another round of hostilities. I am skeptical, however, that the U.S. is going to necessarily take part directly. It looks to me like we're emphasizing, for now at least, a support role But I do believe Israel is getting ready to hit hard into Iran.
Okay, let's pause for a moment before we get to Israel, because we're going to nerd out on military details that people do not know the way you know them. So please explain. Tankers, F-35s, yes. Hawkeyes, what are these things?
Well, so the F-35s, and I believe it's the F-35C, which is the naval variant, which is the one that's designed to take off and land on carriers. There are three variants. The Marine Corps has a variant, which I think is the most interesting one. It basically lands and takes off like a helicopter. That's the F-35B. And then the Air Force has the F-35A, which is the most boring one. So those are warplanes. Those are traditional. Everybody kind of figure out what those are. They fly in and they bomb and they kill the enemy. The F-A-18 Super Hornet, same thing. It's a fourth generation, though, as opposed to a fifth generation plane, which the F-35 is. But the interesting thing, and I'm a logistics guy by nature, so the interesting thing is all of the movement of the big KC-135 strato tankers. Those are the things, they're called strategic enablers, the Air Force refers to them as. And as that name suggests, it basically allows or enables either our military or a friendly military to conduct really complex, long-range airstrikes against distant targets. And as you know, the distance from Israeli airspace to Iranian airspace is pretty big. So they need to refuel at some point. In the first round of fight with Iran in June, they relied, Israel did, on, they, this was not advertised, but a picket of KC-135s flew out of Al Udeid in the middle of the night on that first night and topped off the Israeli bombers. Allowed for the Israelis to continuously striking at Iran. So something similar is going to happen with the KC-135. I mentioned the E-2D Hawkeye, which is a surveillance plane that it's a propeller twin engine plane. It flies off of the aircraft carrier. There's also on the carrier, there would be, the Growler, which is it's the same airframe as an F-A-18, but it basically does electronic warfare. So it basically tries to switch off enemy air defenses that allows for gaps to form for friendly bombers and warplanes to fly in with a reduced chance of getting shot out of the sky. I don't know if we would deploy the Growlers because that would be more direct, I think, than what Trump wants. But we very well may to support the Israelis, but definitely those strato tankers, the mid-air refuelers, those are a big deal. And also I suspect there's probably going to be some AWACS, which are basically, command and control planes. They'll be orbiting the area as well, providing, assistance to the Israelis on top of whatever the Israelis have deployed. But what it looks like to me so far, Jesse, is this is going to be a very big supporting role we're going to be providing. But that could be problematic because I don't know if the Israelis have the capacity to fully do really what they want to do on their own. Ultimately, last time we had to get involved with the B-2s, I don't know if Trump wants to do that again, but I don't know if the Israelis actually have the capacity to do what they're saying they want to do, which it looks like they want to do decapitation strikes against the regime in Iran.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up because that's exactly where we're going next. Of course, talking to Brandon Weikert, national security guy. What does that mean? What does Israel want? How would Israel even go about doing it? What are decapitation strikes? Is this basically assassinating people with fighter jets?
So on paper, yes, but there's more to it. It sounds to me like Mossad, Israel's intelligence, has penetrated pretty deep within the Iranian regime. They have people on the inside. I was told during the June war, somebody that I rely on who's Israeli, they told me the night of the attack that there were literally Mossad agents in the bunkers with the Iranian leaders. And people don't realize how the reason those Israeli airstrikes in the opening days of that war were so effective was because they literally had people on the ground in Iran hiding out, basically ranging the targets for the Israeli warplanes. I doubt the Israeli air campaign would have been as effective as it was had it not been for that really effective penetration of Iranian society and their government and military by Israeli spies. And in many cases, the Israeli spies were women who were penetrating the regime in more ways than one. But that is one of the things the Israelis are very good at, is deploying their people into these secretive positions where they can basically get really good targeting. And that's at play here again. I think that the ultimate goal, and I think Netanyahu has even said this at one point in the last few months, the ultimate goal, the perfect vision, is to, one way or the other, get rid of the regime in Iran. And we saw them try that initially in the June war, where they were killing a lot of Iranian generals. They killed some, I think they killed like the number two in Iran. And we know they were targeting the Iranian Ayatollah Khamenei, which is why they literally, the Iranians had to literally move him to a bunker that was far removed from Iran's kind of major cities. And they basically did not allow any kind of electronic device into that bunker, which meant that the Ayatollah was giving orders by hand, by paper, and they were physically driving those orders to the various commands and then transmitting them because they were so paranoid that the Israelis were going to kill their grand leader.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if all my general staff was getting wiped out too, I'd probably start handing out love notes myself. Okay, Brandon, do you have a few more minutes for us after the break? Because I didn't even get to Venezuela. This Iran-Israel stuff is so fascinating, but I want to talk Venezuela with you if you have a few. Is that okay?
Yeah, I do. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to come back and we're going to talk to Brandon Weikert about Venezuela, because Venezuela apparently can detect our stealth stuff. How stealthy is stealth stuff? We're going to have a little conversation next. Trump certainly sounds like he's ramping up this war on the cartels. Before we come back with more Brandon Weikert, I want to talk to you about saving a baby's life. About the most precious thing in the world, right? I think you would like to imagine of yourself, I'd like to imagine of myself, if you're standing on the sidewalk and there's a one-year-old standing in the road and there's a car barreling at them, that you would run out there and grab that child and try to save their life, even maybe at the cost of yours. Maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't, but we like to imagine that about ourselves. But you don't have to throw yourself in front of a semi to save a baby's life. You can give $28 to preborn. When a woman hears a heartbeat, she chooses life almost every time. The ultrasound is our weapon to defeat this pro-death agenda. And that's what preborn gives. Free ultrasounds. And then care afterwards if she needs it. She needs help with diapers, formula, place to stay. Preborn doesn't kick her out. They show her true love. $28 buys that ultrasound. Preborn.com/Jesse is where you give. Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn. We'll be back.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so?
Yeah.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Thursday as we cruise into the weekend. But let's come back to Brandon Weikert, speaking with our national security guy, Brandon Weikert. You really should be hoovering up his books. Winning Space might be one of my favorites. But we're not talking about space. We're about to talk about Venezuela. What's happening in Venezuela? Who's helping who? What are we doing? Brandon, take it away.
Well, I think that we are, well, I know we are getting ready to bomb them. I was told that recently by somebody that I rely on for a lot of information about U.S. military information. It looks like in the next 2 to 3 weeks, there's going to be something going on with U.S. bombing of quote-unquote drug-related targets in Venezuela. But I would just remind your audience that when Trump says we're going after the drug lords and the drug production facilities, Venezuela is basically running the world's largest state-owned drug cartel, which means if we're targeting the leadership of the Cartel of the Suns, which is the big cartel in Venezuela, technically we're going to be targeting Maduro, the leader of Venezuela himself, because he's basically the leader of this cartel. So that is a little bit of an interesting sleight of hand that Trump uses for basically saying we're doing regime change in Venezuela. We've moved a flotilla off the coast. We've got about 10, I think, F-35s. These are the Marine Corps variants, the ones that can take off and land like helicopters, the F-35B. And it looks like we're getting ready to do something. And I think the reason that Trump is so gung-ho about taking out Maduro is, and I don't know if, you know, this is real or not, I'm just reporting what I've heard from people close to Trump, is that the president really believes that there was an attempt by Maduro in 2020 to basically help steal the election against him. And if that is the case, if Trump really believes this, the Venezuelan dictator is, he's not getting out of this alive. There's no way that Trump's going to let him get away, you know, and negotiate his way out of this. Because a lot of people have been asking me, like, why is Trump so committed to Venezuela? And it does seem a bit extreme, because Venezuela, you would not think, is like the number one threat to us. But Trump is acting like it is. And I think it's because he thinks Maduro had a hand in the, you know, 2020 election steal. But that is why you're seeing this buildup. And Trump is going to go in, I think, in the next 2 to 3 weeks with airstrikes.
Okay, so I guess I have to ask the question, because I'm unaware, and I mean, maybe it's true. What does Trump think Maduro did in 2020?
Well, it has to do with this firm that was started by a bunch of Venezuelan expatriates called Smartmatic, and they basically... it's a software company that does all of the electronic voting machines. They do a lot around the world, not just here in the United States. And in fact, three of the corporate leaders for that company are up on charges in the Philippines for bribing election officials in the Philippines. But they were, if you remember, in 2020, they were accused of having, by Trump, of having to had a hand in stealing the election. But ultimately, whether it's true or not, the point is Trump believes that. And if Trump is linking what happened in 2020, him losing, to what's going on in Venezuela right now, anybody hoping for a negotiated settlement, you're not going to get it, because Trump has got the bit between his teeth and he's like a Rottweiler. He's not going to let it go until he tastes blood. And that's why you have this buildup there. And that's why I think the person who told me we're probably going to start bombing in 2 to 3 weeks is probably correct, because he really thinks that Maduro is like a really, and Maduro is, he's not a great guy, you know, but he's not interested in negotiating with Maduro.
Okay. So that obviously leads us to, is this going to be a cakewalk for us? Because I would argue that most Americans, myself included, I don't claim to be an expert, think about that regime and we think, surely we're not going to lose anyone. Frankly, we're not even really in danger of losing anyone. Certainly, if we're just dropping some bombs and flying some sorties, am I wrong?
Well, on the face of it, you're not. And initially, you know, when we started building up, I was sort of laughing like, this is going to be like Grenada or like Panama in the 80s, remember? You know, 3-day war, in and out, you know, we're good to go. But then I start seeing these reports of the drone capabilities that Russia and Iran for the last several years have been helping Venezuela develop. And we start hearing about the Padrino, the head of the Venezuelan military this morning, gave a press conference in which he claimed they detected three or four of these Marine Corps F-35Bs in their airspace. So that starts making me question, are the Venezuelans being given training and capabilities by the Russians, whom they have a military alliance with? The Russians have really proven themselves effective at using really innovative techniques on their radars for detecting American stealth planes, The Chinese have also developed similar capabilities. It's not foolproof. Still, we have a lot of advantages with stealth, but the Russians in particular have been really developing these innovative ways of figuring out how to pinpoint American stealth planes. And they're pretty cheap, these methods. It's not like they're reinventing new technology. They're using existing detection technology, but they're doing it in a really unique way. They could be showing the Venezuelans how to do that. I know they showed the Iranians how to do that. So this is a concern, obviously, because the F-35 is our big primary warplane that we're going to be sending against Venezuela. And while I do think the Venezuelan military is not impressive, they do have certain unconventional capabilities that could make them a bit harder to kill than we think. Furthermore, it's a huge country. And, you know, the last thing we want to do is get involved in some kind of a jungle war. You know, this is not really being considered, I think, by the Pentagon as anything other than a cakewalk. But we might be surprised if we're not careful.
Yeah, we sure might. Brandon Weichert, you are the best. Go pick up his books. He is the best. Brandon, thank you, my man. I appreciate you. I nerd out on that stuff, Chris. I do. I nerd out on rough greens. You know that? I obsess over it. Well, at this point in time, my whole family obsesses over it because we feel like we're giving Fred a longer life every time we sprinkle it on his food. I understand now that I gave all the dogs I ever had dead food their whole lives. Because you give your dog brown dog food. I do it. I did it. It's all I ever did. And I always thought there was stuff in it. Surely there's stuff in it, right? It's cardboard. There was stuff in it at some point in time, but they killed it all at the factory so it doesn't go bad in a week at the pet store. Without sprinkling rough greens on your dog's food, your dog never gets the live nutrients it needs to live longer and healthier. You want a dog that looks better, smells better, lives longer, better energy. Rough greens is how you do that. Free jumpstart trial bags for my listeners. roughgreens.com, promo code Jesse, or call them 214-ROUGH-DOG. All right? Oh, we're left. Hang on.
This is an iHeart podcast.